The following conference is one of a second series of retreat conferences given by Father John A. Hardin, S.J. Father Hardin is a professor of theology and teaches at the Pontifical Institute for Advanced Studies in Catholic Doctrine at St. John's University in New York. Father is well known as a lecturer, retreat master, and author. This second series of retreat conferences has proved to be of great spiritual inspiration and assistance to priests, religious, and laity alike, because, like all of Father Hardin's conferences, one can be well assured they are founded on solid Catholic doctrine. In the following conference, Father Hardin speaks on this subject, the principles and foundations of a retreat. Father Hardin.
For the first day of the retreat, we are reflecting on what is called the principle and foundation of the spiritual exercises. We saw in our previous conference that there are two basic truths which are part of our faith that undergird this so-called principle and foundation. They are the purpose of our existence and the purpose of the existence of all other creatures, including, of course, our fellow human beings, and for us, our fellow religious. You see, they too are meant by God to help us reach our destiny. But then there are two conclusions, one of which we saw and the second we will reflect on in the present conference. The first conclusion is a matter of logic. If, as faith tells us, that creatures are in the world to help us, then we are to use them insofar as they help, and literally be rid of them insofar as they hinder the purpose of our existence. In Latin, it is the famous tantum quantum rule. Insofar that's tantum, as that's quantum. Creatures are to be used insofar as, no more, no less, as they help us. The second conclusion is not so obvious. It says, in effect, that we are to make ourselves indifferent, very strange word, about which volumes have been written. We are to make ourselves indifferent as a consequence of what we've just said regarding everything in life. So that insofar as in us lies, we should not prefer a long life to a short one, health to sickness, honor to dishonor, or wealth to poverty. Unquote, St. Ignatius, quoting all the masters of Christian sanctity. I say this conclusion is not so obvious because, as it stands, it presupposes something that, on reflection, we should be willing to admit, but on first sight, is not so clear. In fact, it presupposes several premises. First of all, if I were to ask whether all the creatures that God has made are good, we would have to answer yes. All the creatures, insofar as they have been made by God, are good. But does it therefore follow that all creatures are necessarily good for us? They are all good, but they are not necessarily all good for me, in that not necessarily every creature that enters my life will necessarily help me by being used. Oh, that's where it gets subtle. You see, some creatures help by not being used. And you don't figure that one out by just human insight. In other words, part of our faith is to believe that God has put into our lives creatures that are very appealing, as we say, naturally attractive, as He has correspondingly put into our lives creatures that are naturally not appealing, that we naturally dislike. And St. Ignatius, because that's what the Church teaches, gave four prominent examples of things which we all naturally like and things which we naturally dislike. We all naturally like a long life. We all naturally like health. We all naturally like to be well thought of and honored. And we all naturally like to possess. And incidentally, we don't lose that desire to possess by taking the vow of poverty. Just for the record. We all naturally dislike a short life, which I prefer to call a shortened life. We fear it. We all naturally fear sickness. As one who has been in and out of hospitals so many times, I can testify as a witness of one that we naturally dislike sickness with all that goes with it. We naturally dislike to not possess. Every once in a while I have dinner with a family with young children. And I've noticed this as one who doesn't so often see children. When I do, I watch them shrewdly. What can they teach me? Well, I've seen this. A youngster, let's make it 6 months old, in the playpen. I've discovered the thing with bars around it is called a playpen. You drop the creature from the top, it's a playpen. Can't get out. Outside this playpen is a a brother, 3 years old. There's a rattle in the playpen. Big brother puts his fist to the playpen and pulls out the rattle. There is a screech. Four days ago on the New York subway, I watched two children competing for their mother's lap. This is possession. I'm just trying to illustrate a principle, sisters. It was late at night. They were both sleepy. A boy and a girl. Boy, I would say about 6. The girl, about 4. She had her head on the mother's lap. And he wanted his there, too. So he put his on the mother's lap, and the mother tried to cooperate. But his head was bigger, and he kept brushing his little sister's head out of the way. Finally, the girl gave up because he was older and stronger. And she began to cry. Then for the next 10 minutes, the mother patted the girl. Then she pushed the boy to the side and told the girl to take the lap. We all want to possess, from a rattle to a lap to you name it. And we dread to be dispossessed. It can be as little a thing as the biggest piece of cake on the table. And there's just a twinge of avarice when somebody else gets it and we noticed it. We all dislike to be not well thought of. And notice it's not even being well spoken of. We dread even the thought of people not thinking well of us. Saying all of this is highly relevant to the retreat. Because when the great saints and spiritual teachers of the church tell us that if we're going to use creatures the way God wants us to, which means embrace some and sacrifice others, we've got to work and work at making ourselves internally free. That's what this indifference is all about. Internally free, so that insofar as it is possible with God's grace, and it takes a lot of grace, does it ever, to really not prefer health to sickness. I've spent too many hours on too many hospital beds not to know that this does not come from reading a book. And so of all other creatures, now this is the background for what will follow in the retreat. But now we ask ourselves, how come Why do we have these strange biases in favor of wealth, acceptance, and the fear of not having, the fear of not being accepted, the dread of rejection? What crimes are committed through human respect because we're afraid of what people will say or think about us? How come? There are two reasons. The one is part of the probation to which all rational beings, not excluding even the angels, part of the probation to which we are all subject, namely, that we are put into this world as the angels were put into theirs, but without seeing the vision of God. Well, we couldn't possibly have these biases. There are no likes and dislikes in heaven. What a joy. Everything that will appeal will be good. That's why I'm looking forward to it. But here in this world, we are living on faith. Short then of the vision of God, when we will not be able to make wrong choices, we will not be able to make a wrong choice here on earth because we're living by faith. We believe, listen, we believe that certain things are good, when sometimes our whole nature rebels against it, and we believe that certain things are not good for us, when our whole nature is drawn as to a powerful magnet towards it. Why then these strange drives in us? Because we are still living by faith. No matter how we demythologize, as the specialists are trying to do, the first chapters of Genesis, whatever God gave as the test to our first parents, it was primarily a test of faith. He told them something which was naturally appealing would be supernaturally bad. And they were bidden to act on that faith. That's us. But you see immediately what responsibilities it places on us to deepen this faith, to clarify it, so that the good things of God will not be as they can be in such powerful competition with the good things of man. Am I clear? That the good things of God, though known by faith, will become so lucidly good, so obviously satisfying, so deeply desirable, that, short, of course, of the vision of God, we shall nevertheless be able to take these temptations. That's all a temptation is. Something appealing which is not morally good. That's one of my several theological definitions of temptation. So that the appeal of what is bad will be lessened, and the appeal of what is known by faith to be good will be deepened. Because, let's face it, we go where our hearts lead us, as Christ so clearly told us. But there is another reason why we have these strange, sometimes maddening drives in us, away from that which faith tells us we should go towards, and towards things that faith tells us, no, no, not for you. The reason is, besides the fact that we are still living by faith, that we have a fallen human nature. We don't usually like to use that expression, and certain things have come out of vogue, or do things go out of vogue, as by now a number of reviewers of the Catholic Catechism have reminded the author. By and large, most reviewers have been happy. Some have been deeply embarrassed that a Jesuit would write in such preconciliar terms. Well, my heart goes out in pity to those people. But one of the preconciliar terms that he better use, as long as there will be ecumenical councils, is that we've got a fallen human nature. Now, there are all kinds of terms that have been coined over the years that we find in spiritual books, and that we find in that one book which is so clear in teaching us, the Book of Experience, called a tug, called an urge, call it a propensity, call it a tendency, call it desire, call it passion, call it a want, call it a need, you name it, we've got it. Not all have the same kind, but we've all got them. They are not always equally strong in any one person. Things may be different in the afternoon than they were in the morning. And I discovered, for example, things can change in a moment. I've been teaching during the past semester, Well, more than once, I would have to fly into Philadelphia, since I was also teaching in New York during the summer. So I would come into Philadelphia from Chicago, call in ahead of time, have a car waiting for me from the mother house, and the plane arrived at 1:49, and classes began at 3, about 25 miles away. You could make it. Except that Philadelphia decided to resurface streets that haven't been resurfaced, I think, since the time of Benjamin Franklin. They're preparing for the bicentennial. As I told the novices, the only thing that kept me in patience, what would normally be a 40-minute drive took once 1 hour and 40 minutes. The chauffeur did everything possible, but he couldn't go over the tractors on the road. I prayed every minute, Lord, keep me patient. A word, a glance, or in this case, a torn up road, and from a perfectly self-possessed individual, one who has to pray to keep him patient. So we've all got these urges and tendencies. Consequently, we are to brace ourselves, and this is what a retreat is about, to brace ourselves for the rest of our lives, so that when we will be in various ways either aroused or provoked, and that about covers it. That we shall be able to cope with the temptation. But let's never underestimate either the power of these drives, or suppose that because we are, well, let's say, getting up in years, or by now have been so many years in the religious life, said so many prayers, received so many sacraments, that somehow we are now delivered from that fallen human nature. Oh, no, we're not. It can spring on us like a wild beast. That's right, us. And betray us when we least expect. And the betrayal, as you know, in our lives may not even be externally manifest. Because I can have envy that no one knows I've got. Or a deep-seated grudge that no one appreciates. Or a sadness for lack of confidence in God's providence that may be belied by my cheerful, sometimes too cheerful, exterior. Oh, sisters, having lived with myself for so many years, I think I've learned how sly this human nature is. That's us. So then, having said all of this, what are we to do? Well, there are many things that we shall direct our thoughts to during the retreat. But let me just stress two for the rest of this conference, each touching on the two reasons why we are bidden by Christ through His church to make ourselves, and that's the verb, to make ourselves indifferent, because we are not so naturally, so as not to prefer what we like, and not to fear or run away from what we dislike. The first reason, we said, was the fact that we are still living by faith. On this level, what we need and how we need it is daily and more than once daily to reflect on those truths of faith that I most need. You know, there are some truths of faith that most of us find not too hard to accept. they cause us no great problem. There are other truths of faith that are more demanding. What are those in my life that require efforts for me to live up to? Let me just suggest three such truths. Truth number one. This life is a passing shadow. Right? The Old Testament exhausts the figures of speech to describe the shortness of this life. Compares it to a wisp of smoke, to an arrow piercing the air. To the wave raised by a passing boat. To the song of a bird. To the grass of the field. That's God talking to us. That's faith. To read those beautiful images is one thing. To treat this life as a wisp of smoke or the chirp of a bird or the grass that withers, to live that way, oh, that's something else. We need this, all of us. We are told by Christ, not once but many times, not to fear. Trust in God, trust in me. I'm going ahead of you to prepare a home for you. How many times he told the disciples not to fear, and his first message on Easter Sunday to his frightened apostles, the pillars of the church, peace. The Greek is imperative, to make sure he repeated it. Peace. That's our faith. How little it takes to shake this peace. We believe, as the same Christ on the same occasion told his disciples, giving the apostles the power to forgive sins. Whatever sins you will loose, they are loosed. Whatever sins you will bind, they are bound. We have by now been forgiven often enough. We believe that our past has been wiped out. Do we act as people who are still living in that dreary past? There are three kinds of people that I have met, as we all have. Those who live consistently in the past, those who live as though there were no past or future, just the present, and the poets, the dreamers, who live only in the future. If we have a tendency to live in that past, our own past, faith should tell us that God is a merciful Lord, and if He is forgiven, we are to forget. By the way, that's the way the statement should go. God forgives, we are to forget. Consequently, our first responsibility, if we're going to make ourselves free from these drives, tendencies, and propensities that hinder our passage to Christ, we must first often reflect and ask God to enlighten us that we might more clearly see what we need so that these articles of faith will not just be articles of the creed. And secondly, regarding our inordinate desires, we, pleasure-seeking, pain-avoiding creatures, a good definition of human nature. This calls for a corresponding effort, always with God's grace, but now of the will, to free ourselves of these tendencies as far as it is possible with God's grace. Hence, and as you might be gathering, I'm building up for the next 7 days. There's enough to work there. We first of all must admit that we've got these tendencies. We've got them. I don't like the expression, seven capital sins. Oh, it's all right, but it doesn't really say what needs to be said. There are seven capital tendencies. We've all got them, some more than others. Which ones do I have? It's the sheerest wisdom to have the humility to admit it, that I am naturally prone to laziness. That's right. Or whatever my tendency is. And though I seldom say this, trusting that I'm among friends, not infrequently, sisters, my particular examine is examining myself on how many hours of work I put in by noon and how many hours of work I put in before I go to sleep. You'd never guess this, would you? That's right. I have a lazy streak that must be overcome. First, then, find out what it is. And then, set about ways and means of either overcoming it, if it is to be overcome head on, or outwitting it, if it's to be outwitted, or if I can't do anything better, as the little flower did on more than one occasion, so she admits. There were some situations that were so provocative of her. I don't know how this is going to sound. The temper of a mystic. She had to run away. There are some people, on some occasions, when we tell Lord, dear Lord, I know I'm a coward, but the best way I can keep myself from offending you by at least thinking something that I shouldn't about Sister so-and-so. Is by not being there when she is, under circumstances that I foresee will be too much for me. One final observation. You may wonder, is this the same Father Hardin that we have been hearing? Oh, sisters, I have all kinds of fine conferences ready for the retreat. And we'll have not a few on the sublime virtues of imitating Christ. 8 days, after all, are a long time. But, let's face it, for most of us, it is sinners who are becoming saints. And we better first be sure we know who we are before we make the mistake of ambitioning becoming what we are not yet, and not uprooting those defects of our nature that in overcoming, and this is the good part of it, would you believe it? It's by working on this weed patch, pulling out weeds, overcoming these failings and weaknesses, that God actually is pleased with our efforts and gives us credit for having cultivated the whole garden. Whereas we know that he's the one who is really responsible. Our principal job on the road to holiness, I didn't use this kind of language before, but I do now. Our principal job on the way to holiness is to overcome our sinful tendencies. Please God, we shall have the humility to recognize the task that lies ahead and the joy of knowing that then whatever virtues we will get, we will tell the Lord, "Oh Lord, people tell me I've got this or that virtue. Frankly, I didn't even realize it. I've been so hard at work overcoming my vices." In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit, amen.